Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a 5-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very, very happy Thursday, April 4th, 2024, the start of a completely new era of USC Trojans basketball. This is Chase, and this is a big day. It's a big podcast, huge podcast. So we brought in a whole team and a special guest. So we've got Nick with us, we've got Roman with us, and we've got Jason, who you may have seen over on the Peristyle, who is just an amazing poster. Thanks all for being there. Nick, it's Eric Musselman is the new head coach of USC basketball. Maybe not the friendliest guy in the world, but I mean, this is a serious basketball coach.
Yeah, he is. He checks so many boxes, right? I mean, he's got the NBA pedigree, coached in multiple NBA spots. He's won at the mid-major level at Nevada, going to the Sweet 16 with them. Including winning at Galen with Nevada and the Martin brothers there. He's got the SEC track record. Last 4 years, this year was a down year for him, but two Elite Eights and a Sweet 16. It's really hard to come up with very many coaches that have that impressive of a tournament resume in recent years here. And then for me, the other thing that stands out is he can win in so many ways. He's got teams that were very good defensive teams. He's had teams that are very good offensive teams. But then beyond that, I know he's kind of known as the portal king, and he certainly is, but he's also shown the ability to recruit elite high school kids. That 1 year bringing in Nick Smith, Jordan Walsh, and Anthony Black. So much to like about this hire, and I'll kick it to you guys to get your initial thoughts too.
Yeah, so let me ask Romer, because Romer, we did a podcast with you earlier in the week. You had you kind of reviewed your kind of three guys you were looking at. Musselman was not on that list. What are your thoughts now that he is the new coach? See, he's on mute. Make sure we get him off mute. Okay. Well, here we go. Okay.
Sorry about that. Well, first and foremost, the reason why I didn't initially bring him up was simply because a coach doesn't really lead the SEC, right? Because, they have all the resources. They could pay whatever salary it is that they demand to keep them at bay. But, despite his West Coast ties and him, apparently wanting to come back to the West Coast to coach, I just didn't see it as a possibility. But, here we are. I'm very excited. Like Nick said, we have the Portal King now. He has a lot lined up for him. And see what type of progress he could bring to USC to help rejuvenate this roster.
So, Jason, let me ask you, you've had all kinds of little interesting pieces of data that you've posted and did analysis. And one of the analysis you did really kind of demonstrated that, Sean Miller too, but Musselman was a very credible, from a data standpoint, candidate for the job. And then he gets it. Why don't you, Jason, why don't you just run through kind of your thoughts on this and I'll kind of hand it over to you and just, you can let me know of like the things you like about his resume and any concerns you have as well, obviously.
For sure. Thanks for having me on, Chase. So when I saw the candidate list come out, from people started tweeting out, hey, this is who's up for consideration for the USC job. One of the things that I immediately like to do is just go grab a bunch of data on all these guys, just kind of put it in a spreadsheet, lay it out, and see, who do I like, who do I not like? And one thing that jumped out at me about Musselman specifically is that he has a track record better than maybe any other candidate in this search of being able to come into a job quickly and replace production from the prior year's team, right? So what I mean by that is there are metrics that say how many minutes from last year's season roll over to the next season. So if you lose a player, you lose their minutes, right? And in the case of Musselman, he has three times had a team where he's lost more than 65% of his production from the prior year and still managed to produce a top 50 KenPom team the following season, which is basically a tournament or bubble caliber team or better. And of all the guys in this search, only Musselman and Sean Miller, if you believe he was a candidate. I didn't actually see his name come up as much, but you know, aspirational type candidate, had that track record of being able to basically rebuild on the fly. And I felt that this was really important for the USC search, right? Because this is the situation here. We're losing all five starters from this year's team. And who's going to come in and be able to produce a brand new team that is credible in the first year in the Big Ten, right? I don't think anyone can have a realistic expectation that with a brand new team, you know, we're going on one of these Sweet 16, Elite Eight type runs. But at the same time, you also don't want to go into the Big Ten with a brand new roster and go 5-15 in that league and become a cellar dweller. And then all of a sudden you're trying to recruit and people don't buy into your vision. So I think of all the guys in this search, he's the one that can hit the portal hard, get us a team very quickly. And then he's shown a track record of taking these teams and building them into something competitive right away. So that's the first thing that jumped out about Mus. The second thing I would say is you just compare him with Andy Enfield, and you can go down every stat that I pulled. You know, what was his average KenPom finish? How were his offenses? How were his defenses? How did he perform with his roster talent relative to expectations? How has he done in the tournament? And pretty much across the board, Musselman wins almost every single head-to-head, right? So it's very clear that USC is making a substantial upgrade, and that's great to see. So happy to get into more of the details, but I'm monopolizing the conversation here. So back to you, and we can continue with this, whatever you want to know.
You know, one thing I was going to add, just to looking at the KenPom numbers, what's interesting is when Andy first came on board, I think that, you know, because I'm coming off the Florida Gulf Coast, Dunk City experience, he tried to implement like a really fast tempo offense. He did have Julian Jacobs on the team at the time, who was kind of like, he's basically, as a point guard, he's only really totally effective when he's playing, you know, full court, just trying to score very fast. You get him into a slog, slow down half court game. He's not really effective at all. And we did have higher tempo offenses during those first couple of seasons. Number 34, number 25, kind of slowed down season three. After that, we are just a very medium tempo team, period. I mean, we just never up tempo again. Last couple of seasons, a little better, but we got it. Even, you know, the best teams were very slow down for slow down teams. And we didn't really have point guards. I mean, so you kind of, in a sense, that kind of makes sense. Musselman's teams at Arkansas have averaged about 40th in the country in tempo. So you're going to see right away some more up tempo stuff. Obviously, the guards that he brings in are going to be key to that, but you're going to see a more exciting brand of basketball. He's recruited athletes in the past. That's going to be a big part of this, I think, the success that he's going to have. Like, for example, probably the best Musselman team at Arkansas, which is, I think, probably, Nick, would you say it was his first Elite Eight team? So this is going back a few seasons ago, to like 2021, 2020, 2021 season, when he had J.D. Anote, he had Moody. And then I guess the next Elite Eight team, he had Jalen Williams. Just a little bit more like physical defensive players that I think he should probably try to maybe really think about trying to bring a couple of those guys in.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had our fun with JD Notte on the podcast, just for his shot selection and kind of very mediocre percentages. But the guy was a great defender. You know, only 6'2", but super quick hands, got a ton of steals. And I think that's what this team lacked, this most recent Arkansas team. They just didn't have those quick twitch guards get steals, like Anote. Stanley Amude was a really good player for them on the second Elite Eight team. Same with Audis Tony. So he got these transfers who were really, really high-level athletes. Moses Moody was the lottery guy that he got, one and done, did a great job developing him. But, you know, the best thing I think that Mus has done is his ability to bring in athletes, get them to play really hard on the defensive end and attack the offensive glass and kind of just overwhelm opposing teams with athleticism and length.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm curious out of that front. What do you think about Romer? I mean, do you – if you put yourself in the position of the bigs that we have returning, or at least have not left yet, who told Andy they wanted to return, Brandon Gardner and Arrington Page. Now, Vincent Wychuk was a little different because his sister is joining the women's basketball team. And Harrison Hornery, who I think might just want to stick around and be in California. Do you think, particularly the first two, do you think that that Mus is going to try to recruit them back to try to stay? And do you think there's a chance they would stay? And could they be the type of kind of like physical players that it turned them into the physical players that ultimately Mus could succeed with?
You know, it's pretty unfortunate that, you know, Arrington and Brandon both were pretty much unavailable due to some off-season injuries that they pretty much came across. And so we didn't really see what they were capable of. But, you know, just the style that Mus brings and the way he is with roster construction and how aggressive he is in the portal, all bets are off, you know. I wouldn't be surprised if he would want to replace those types of players, because the players that you mentioned, like Trevon Brazil, Jalen Williams, and Jordan Walsh, those are players who played hard on defense. They're very athletic and very talented. You know, they kind of had NBA type of level potential. And when based on what we've seen and what we know from Arrington Page and to a lesser extent Brandon Gardner, like we kind of compared them like off record to like a Jerry Dupree. Like Jerry Dupree, did he even sniff the NBA? No, right? So all bets are off, to be honest. And Harrison Hornery, like Vincent Wychuku, hopefully he gets a full offseason and doesn't suffer any setbacks, because we know the potential is there. So we'll see. We'll take it from there. And he already has Josh Cohen coming in, who was able to just, you know, make his commitment right away in the moment Eric was named the head coach at USC. So
we'll talk about that in a second. Sorry, Jason, were you saying something?
No, I just to kind of continue the conversation about style of play, right? We're talking about whether some of these guys can fit into what Mus does. And so I did a bit of a deep dive just on kind of what exactly the Mus system looks like. You know, some coaches are very consistent from year to year. Others have certain things that are consistent and others that they kind of adapt to their personnel. So briefly, you know, we talked about this, right? The Mus teams play very fast. But one thing that's interesting that gets lost in that kind of top line tempo calculation is, right, there's two ways to play fast. You can play fast on offense, but you can also play very aggressively on defense. And actually part of what drives them to have such high tempo numbers in his time at Nevada and Arkansas is that he's four of the past 5 years, Arkansas was in the top 100 in turnovers forced, and they're very high up in the rankings in terms of how short opponent possessions last. I saw an interview he gave right after he got the Arkansas job, and he called his defensive philosophy rush the quarterback, right? And so it's all about making teams uncomfortable and getting up on them. And then on the offensive side of the ball, the number one thing that his teams emphasize is getting to the free throw line. in 9 seasons as a head coach. I believe it's they finished like in the top 30 nationally in free throw rate, like 7 out of those 9 years. So that's very telling, right? Like you watch a Musk game, they're trying to drive, get to the line. You know, for folks that know basketball analytics, like the best shot you can get is a free throw. So shooting a ton of free throws is his path to having an efficient offense. And beyond that, it really kind of varies year to year in terms of at Nevada, right? His teams are really excellent at taking care of the ball. And that combination of, right, ball handling plus getting to the line is when he had his best statistical offenses. They're a bit of a throwback in terms of like three-pointers attempted. You know, you look at like Alabama and Nate Oates in the Final Four getting up 30, 35 threes a game. At Nevada, they shot a few more threes. But at Arkansas, they've actually been in the bottom 100 for the past 4 years in terms of how many threes they attempt. So it's about these kind of big physical guys, athletic, get to the lane, get to the rim, get fouled. And so, you know, that's what we're trying to figure out if some of these guys were potentially returning on the roster can fit into a system like that.
And that is interesting because you know, that should be, if these guys play to their potential, that should be what Brandon Gardner and Aaron Page and Vincent Uwachukwu should be able to do. Just to underscore a little bit what Jason was talking about, this season, USC got 18% of its points from the free throw line. Arkansas, now remember, neither team did very well. In fact, they very similar results for both teams. Arkansas got 25% of its points from the free throw line. So just a big difference. Nick, you have any thoughts on this? Do you think we should be looking to keep these bigs who are still kind of at SC as part of the team? Should we kind of be like, you know what, time to cut bait. Let's bring in 10 guys from the portal. What are your thoughts?
So it's hard to know with Gardner, right? It's because we haven't seen him play. He wasn't a super highly touted recruit. I mean, he was kind of like a high-end three-star, who I think he did win Mr. Basketball in New York. But, you know, he was coming in with the understanding that he was a project, right? Great athlete, but, you know, long way to go on the skill level. Page is the guy that's really interesting to me just because I've seen him pop several times, even in person athletically. One moment that stands out particularly is in the Colorado game where he had that kind of crazy chase down block. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it was a super, super athletic play, and showed a lot of effort. He does show, like, you know, signs that maybe he could shoot threes one day. I don't know if you're getting that next year or that's maybe a 2 to 3 years down the line sort of thing too. So you have to consider that. But, you know, of the bigs, he's the one guy athletically that I think could fit into Musselman's philosomy.
Romer, why don't you talk a little bit about just, you know, maybe some high school recruits here, because without getting to a long list of like forward classes just right now available, we have Trent Perry, who's decommitted. He's kind of a free agent. I know UCLA is talking to him. I'm sure a lot of schools are kind of talking to him. Zaya Elohim from Sierra Canyon is going to, from what I understand, it will be joining us. He had previously committed to Arkansas. I think he signed with Arkansas, so he has to get out of his national letter of intent and then re-sign with USC. And then there are other guys out there, like, for example, Justin Pippen, also at Sierra Canyon. What do you? And then there's the couple guys, you know, Brody Kozlowski and Liam Campbell, who were, you know, I guess Brody is still part of the USC recruiting class. He's the only one left. Any thoughts on those five guys, basically, or six guys?
Well, with Trent, he's obviously the one that you want to reel back in, being the McDonald's All-American. You know, he's coming from a program, Harvard Westlake, where, you know, he's won the CIF Open Division Championship. That's the type of player you want in your program, to not just be a part of the program, but to potentially be a block, because you know he is a point guard. He plays with high intellect, and he's the type of player that will attract other players, just like how he attracted Liam Campbell to USC. You know, those two were actually, they started off as teammates at Harvard Westlake, but you know, Liam eventually moved to Idaho, and then a few years later ended up committing to USC. And he also cited the reason why he wanted to come back and play at home with USC is because of his longstanding friendship with Trent. So you want a player like Trent to kind of like reel back in. A player like Isaiah Elohim, he's an interesting player. He played at Sierra Canyon. You know, early on in his career, he looked like he was a kid that was often compared to Aaron Aflalo. You know, big upper body, very physical, plays defense, and also made key plays on a team that featured players like Brandon Boston. You know, just and he stood out, but for some reason, as his career went on, he was just the type of player that would always get hurt. You know, he didn't play much in AAU for some odd reason. He would sit out, and it just seemed like his overall development took a back seat. A player like Justin Pittman, you kind of have to take a look, because you know you have that rule, right? If he's a son of an NBA Hall of Famer, you kind of have to, you know, kick the tires off at the very least. You know, his brother, who played at Vanderbilt, was a player that we missed out on. He ended up averaging about 20 points at Vanderbilt, and you know, he had a little brief stint with the Lakers. So he's an interesting player, but I don't know if Mus is gonna, you know, kick the tires on him. Brody Kozlowski, I'm not too sure of. I don't really have enough insight on him. So, it, like I said, it's just one of those things where you kind of have to trust Eric's approach in terms of roster construction and roster management, because he's the type of coach that's just been so aggressive in the transfer portal and building his team in that sense.
So, Luca Evans, who's the USC beat reporter for the Orange County Register, tweeted out a couple hours ago that he talked about some of the schools that are reach out for Trent Perry, including Alabama, Virginia, UCLA, Oregon. But then his father also said that SMU is interested, of course, with Andy, and Perry's waiting to see it. This was the way it was phrased. Perry waiting to see if new USC coach Eric Musselman reaches out. So this is 2 hours ago. I think their flight landed about 2 hours ago. You know, I don't know what he's been doing recruiting wise. Today that's an open question to me. I'm not sure, quite frankly. I don't know, Nick. What do you think? Would he take Trent Perry or not? Do you think he might say, he's not exactly. He doesn't have the like physicality profile and guard I'm looking for. What do you think?
I think it's definitely an open question. Not a slam dunk at all. Trent's super skilled, right? The selling point on Trent is he's a legitimate 6'4 guard who can dribble, pass, shoot, and makes the right reads. So I think he has a chance to be a killer 4-year player. You know, especially at a school like Gonzaga, if he goes into that Mark Few offense, where they give him the ball and some responsibility. But you know, he doesn't fit the must profile for a guard, right? Like he's not like a JD Note, super high level athlete, guy that gets a bunch of steals, or a physical freak like Anthony Black, who we had at the lead guard spot at Arkansas. So no, I think Trent could definitely help USC and is a very good player. But I don't think it's a slam dunk here, so to speak.
Jason, I don't know if you have an opinion on this, but do you think that, I mean, it seems like you have a legitimate McDonald's All-American, but probably like a borderline top 30 player, probably, you know, 4-year college guy. I don't see Trent Perry as a guy who's going to leave early to go to the NBA. I could be wrong about that. But he's going to be a credible, I mean, he's probably going to be a guy by the time he's the end of his sophomore year who can consistently score about 12 points a game with efficiencies. Do you think that's the kind of guy that And he's local, right? He's local. He just took his team to back-to-back state championships at the highest level in California. Do you think that Musselman may actually say we're not that interested? Or do you think that he'll have pressure? He'll feel the pressure to bring him in and really give him the where do you land on that?
I think he's a take 100 times out of 100. That's just me. Like, but you know, remember, Mus is coming with a background from the G League, from the NBA. Like, this is a guy who's developed players kind of all shapes and sizes. He has, right, an ideal, as Nick discussed, from, you know, what you've seen at Arkansas. But, you know, let's be pragmatic, right? Like, how many people are left on the team today, and you have a former commit McDonald's All-American 15 miles from campus? I think you just call him up and say, hey, listen, nice to meet you. You know, here's who I am. Here's what I'm all about. Like, we want you to be a part of this. And obviously Perry can make his own decision. And if he's reopened it, I don't know what his NIL situation is now moving forward. But like, I think you definitely make that call and see if he's interested. The fact that his father seems like he's waiting to hear from us is, you know, somewhat telling, right? He could have just said in his decommitment, you know, I'm reopening my recruitment and moving on. But I believe he said specifically, you know, and I would consider USC alongside all these other schools. So I think you let Mus make the pitch. And if it's me, I'm making the pitch to him. I'm not just going to let him walk.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's going to be people in his ear, Mus's ear. It's telling him, hey, you got to make a pitch for this kid. That's my guess. Even if Mus is like, I like the kid, but he's not, you know, necessarily perfect for the, my profile, but I have a feeling he'll reach out warmly. Just, you know, building.
And on that note too, I mean, Jason kind of hit on it, but USC needs to fill roster spots here. I mean, you're losing a lot of, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you're losing a lot of guys to, you know, NBA and the portal. So, you know, if you get a guy like Trent, like maybe he's, I don't know, seventh, eighth man on next year's team, and you can build him into something, you know, someone that can really help you as a sophomore and junior. And, you know, worst case, like maybe it doesn't work out and he hits the portal after a year. And what are you really out at that point? So it does seem like a, you know, a no brainer to me, but he definitely doesn't quite fit that Mus archetype to a T here.
So just going back really quickly to Isaiah Elohim, this is so funny because, you know, and Romer had brought this up. If you wind the clock back 2 years ago from right now, he was rated the number four overall player in his class, the class of 2024. For him, and he's fallen all the way to number 46. What's happened essentially is he stopped growing vertically, and he really didn't develop more of a skill set for his height. So he's prematurely mature. He's prematurely very developed. He is strong, but he's kind of an around the rim kind of player. At 6'4", maybe not even 6'4", which is a bit of a red flag. But going back to the Trent Perry thing, you know, yes, Mus has his profile, but who is the very first recruit that is now committed to USC under Eric Musselman? Josh Cohen. Romer, Josh Cohen is not a freak athlete, a freaky D athlete. You have any thoughts on him?
Well, no, he's not a freaky D athlete, so to say, but I did watch the film. He's very skilled. He knows how to score around the rim. He's ambidextrous, which could score both right and left. And he could actually catch the ball. Something the bigs that they had on the team had trouble doing. So it's just one of those players that you have to have on your roster, you know. He committed to Musselman for a reason. And Musselman went after him for a reason, you know, vice versa. So he's just one of those players that, you know, first commit to USC under Eric Musselman. That's the flagship. So there you go.
He is, you know, very skilled, very fundamentally sound, not a freak athlete. Sounds a little bit like Trent Perry. Just on a personnel basis, I kind of just want to address why Musselman took Josh Cohen based upon what happened with their season. Maybe we should talk about this a little bit because I want to address some of the skeptics of Musselman. And I mean, frankly, if you get away from like kind of the personality characteristics, which are their own thing, a lot of the skepticism is based upon this past season where he went 16-17, did not have a strong season, kind of a bit of a mess, more than a bit of a mess. And this was coming after he had brought in some really big names from the transfer portal. He brought in Tremont Mark from Houston. He brought in Khalif Battle from Temple. He brought in Keon Minifield from Washington. Those are three players that Nick and I had just loved and raved about at different times. He gets all three of these guys. I'm like, oh my goodness. Now, Minifield was on probation, I think, to start the season. So he actually didn't even play early on. They were, you know, that left Devo Davis trying to play point guard for them sometimes. It was kind of a weird situation. And then their situation with the bigs, that was kind of a mess too. You know, they still had Jalen Graham, but he didn't play hardly at all last season. Wasn't a tremendous contributor this season. And then the remaining Mitchell brother, Maki Mitchell, he was getting most of the minutes. You know, when I saw him out there, Nick, Mitchell, like, yeah, he would score at times, but man, he seemed like he was dogging it a lot on defense last year. Like he'd come in for like some big block here, but like he let his man get behind him. He let, you know, other, you know, just wasn't like fundamentally sound or playing very hard on defense. And that's kind of a symptom of, I think, some of the problems with their team. You know, I think you had described it as, you know, they didn't have the twitchy guards. There's issues with the bigs. And then over as the season wears on, the problems just become too much and things just kind of become a total mess. Is that how you kind of saw things?
I think so. There's a snowball effect with this stuff and the effort level if your team isn't right. And I think you saw the same deal happen with our team. I mean, our effort level was really inconsistent and certainly declined after the rough start and the Collier injury and everything that happened with our team. But Mitchell, I mean, 2 years ago, he had a really good year. I mean, he was a 9.2 BPM guy that could really rebound both offensively and defensively. He regressed on both the offensive and defensive glass this past season. Shooting percentages were like slightly up, but yeah, I agree with you. He didn't seem totally engaged, you know, throughout the season. And one other note I wanted to make on Khalif Battle, just in the Trent Perry context, is that Battle is a dynamite shooter, especially off of movement. He's super good in that regard. But he's not like a super twitchy steals guy either, right? So it does show that Musselman isn't totally beholden to that model, and definitely is willing to adapt to personnel, even if it doesn't fit his system quite to a T. So I do think at the end of the day, like he's going to recruit Perry, but I just wanted to note that Battle example too.
Jason, what is your, if someone's coming to you and saying, Jason, how can you possibly think this is a good hire? This guy was under 500 last season. You know, we need a coach that's going to win consistently every year. He's bringing in too many new players every year. What would your response to that be?
I would say that this is the era of the transfer portal, and this is what's going to happen moving forward. And if you want to win, you need to embrace it. But, you know, every few years, you're going to do one of these build a team, Frankenstein teams, and it's just not going to click, right? Like you're bringing in so many new guys every year, and that's his job, right? To figure out if it will work. As we discussed earlier, right? He has a track record of making it work. He's done it three times where he's built a brand new team, but for whatever reason, it didn't happen last year. And, you know, the same thing didn't happen for USC last year, but this is a guy, right? So if you're saying make the case for him, okay. Here's a guy who has been an assistant coach for the following people in his career: Chuck Daly, Doc Rivers, Lon Kruger, Mike Fratello, and Herb Zendek. So that's a pretty good set of folks to kind of cut your teeth under. Then I'd tell you, right, there's 21 active coaches who have been to four or more Sweet 16s, and he's one of them. And there's 16 active coaches who have coached more than 100 games in their career and have a winning percentage of 770% or higher. And so, okay, he's one of them too. How many coaches are both? How many coaches have won 70% of their games in their career and have been to four or more Sweet 16s? This is the complete list. Tom Izzo, John Calipari, Bill Self, Mark Few, Rick Pitino, Sean Miller, Thad Matta, Tony Bennett, and Eric Musselman. So if you have an opportunity to hire someone off of that list, I think you say, yeah, I think that would probably be a pretty good idea.
That is a pretty crazy list. I want to tell just a really quick story. I was watching a podcast about college basketball a couple weeks back, and this is right as Arkansas season's ending, and there are rumors right away that Musselman is looking to leave Arkansas. And the two schools that were mentioned at the time, believe it or not, were Arizona State and Minnesota. And the two guys on the podcast could not figure out for what reason that Musselman might be interested in going to Minnesota of all places, especially since they have a coach there who's been doing decently. And I don't think they realized that Musselman, you know, has a huge history in the Midwest, and that his father was the coach of Minnesota, the Golden Gophers, in the 70s. And the reason I bring this up is my dad, the moment I remember many years ago when he first saw Musselman coaching, I think it was for Nevada, and he brings it up, he said, "Oh gosh, that's Bill Musselman's son." And he started telling me these stories about the antics that his father, Bill Musselman, would get into as coaching Minnesota. And apparently his father was like very much kind of like a, almost like a Bobby Knight type of figure, or just, you know, allowed getting into issues. And if you really pull it up on Wikipedia, there was an incident in during the 1971-72 season when a couple of his players assaulted a player on Ohio State. And he was seriously injured. I mean, this caused a big deal. Just by the by, my dad is from Ohio, so he's a huge Ohio. Well, he was a Ohio State fan. And so he's always like associated the Musselman name with that kind of that stuff. Musselman, there was like claims that Musselman had like somehow been involved in the assault, and you know, a lot of stuff. This is obviously his father, not him. His father passed away 24 years ago. So it's not him, but it was funny that these guys doing the podcast just had no, I don't think they had realized that Eric was coming from a family, or his father had been a coach, not only at the college level, but he coached at the NBA level too. He coached the Timberwolves. I think he might've been even their first coach or first or second coach. This is deep in his bloodline. Maybe we'll just talk a little bit about a couple, maybe we'll just mention a couple of players that, that Arkansas was recruiting, like Josh Cohen, prior to Musselman leaving. I know Romer or Nick, either one of you guys, if you want to like just talk about anyone that you've seen that was on their list that you may or may not have taken a look at.
Well, can we spend a little more time on Cohen? I know we touched on him briefly.
Sure, yes.
Really productive player, right? He's 16, and I think he had averaged 6 or 7 boards at UMass. And UMass was a top 100 KenPom team. So quality mid-major, and he was putting up points in the Atlantic 10 on pretty good efficiency. He can't really jump, right? I mean, there's not a lot of rim protection he's going to give you. He's good at just positionally rebounding, more so on the offensive glass than the defensive glass. So I guess, what do you guys think about him in comparison to Chavez Goodwin? I mean, to me, he seems like maybe like Goodwin with a little bit more offensive skill.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair comp. One thing I noticed when I was looking at his stats, KenPom and also Evan Miikala's transfer ranking. He's a 4-star transfer, by the way. He's rated number 129 out of all the transfers right now. Elite at drawing fouls and getting to the line, right? So that's number one reason why he's going to be a fit in this offense. And he's a career 58.5 2-point shooter. But yeah, I mean, I would say similar to Chavez Goodwin in that, like, you're not going to see him. I think he's attempted like 33 pointers in his career, and almost all of them were like this past season when he was at UMass, when he was at St. Francis, Pennsylvania. Before that, like he didn't even bother shooting them at all. So a guy that's just going to be very, very solid inside, playing pretty close to the rim, take efficient 2-point shots, like, and otherwise, hopefully just kind of play within the flow of the offense. A minus defender, by the way, according to Evan Miikala, which was interesting. His metrics are very, very good on the offensive end, but not so much defensively. So something to look out for.
Very much like Vez. Romer, you had kind of mentioned some of these guys that you had seen that they offered Corey Washington from St. Peter's, Darren Boyd from Lipscomb, and then Adu Athiro from Kentucky. I'm hoping I'm not butchering his name. Have you taken a look at any of those guys, or do you have an opinion on any of those guys, or are you kind of still waiting to evaluate?
I'm just waiting to evaluate. I did get a chance to see at the some of the other names though, like Bryce Pope, Francis Nwokorie, also Ayton Wright. Those are three players that do have ties here in the West Coast that Arkansas was recruiting under Musk. Bryce Pope, he's a player who's a shooter. He shot over he shot just a under 40% from 3 points. He led the team in scoring. Ayton Wright's a dynamite player who's fast twitch, could get points in bursts, but he's kind of streaky to a fault. But I do like the fact that the Eric Musselman, he casts a wide net in the transfer portal. He just doesn't just look focus on a certain level. He's
Maybe lost memory there for a second. Just I did look at a couple of these guys. So Corey Washington, kind of a swing man, 6'6" or so. Potential. I mean, he's a high level athlete. The only he can score for sure. Concern there is the 3-point shooting, and he needs the 3-point shooting as part of his package. And it this season, he was only at about 31%. So that's something to be a little concerned about. It really should be part of his game, just based on the size and the skill level. He really does need to shoot outside. Okay, Darren Boyd. Nick told me right after, I was like, why are not more people talking about this guy? And he's like, well, he has like splits, his defensive splits are just terrible. And he's not a passer. He's just like a he's basically like a 5'11" shooting guard, but he doesn't have that quite that quickness, but he will remind you a ton of Mark Sears when you look at him. Very smooth stroke, really good at getting to the basket, can finish with both hands. He is a lefty. He's the kind of guy like he can kind of tantalize you when he watches his tape. So we just gotta be careful with that. If he's truly not a point guard, I think it's tough to play him at his size, but I know that we were looking over there. Nick, you have any thoughts on those guys, or I know I don't think you've taken a look yet, right?
I haven't, but just the profile kind of reminds me a little bit of Chris Likes. The 5'8" Miami guard that transferred to Arkansas. Obviously, his numbers at Lipscomb. His shooting splits are much, much better than Likes. So, way better shot selection, more skill as a jump shooter. But Musk does have a history of taking smaller guards. In recent years here.
And I might have kneecapped him a bit. I mean, I guess he's listed as 6'3". He doesn't look like 6'3". I mean, you see him, he looks like he's like 6 foot max. But he's not like Chris Likes. He's not like clearly the smallest guy you're going to see on the basketball court all season. He's not like that at all. Where it's like, why is it, you know, who is this? Is that like a team manager out there? All right. Jason, you have any thoughts on, you know, players that you may have seen this season that have jumped to the portal that you maybe thought, oh, maybe this is the kind of guy that Musselman would take a run at?
You know, I'm not deep into the portal to have a qualified opinion on that, so I'll probably pass there. But one interesting hypothetical we haven't hit on this yet, right? Kobe Johnson just committed to UCLA. My question to you guys would be, if he was open to returning, would you have tried to keep him?
You know, I thought of, as I was sleeping, going to sleep last night, I actually thought about this question. Because I thought, here's the way I presented it in my mind. What if you knew Trayvon Mark was coming in? Would you still try to keep Kobe? And I think I settled on no. Ugh, I don't know if that's the right answer. Nick, where are you on that?
I would try to keep Kobe. I just think the defensive off-ball impact, defensive IQ. He did have like several possessions this year where he kind of did the space cadet thing on defense and chase steals a bit. But I do think he kind of has that innate ability to force turnovers. And if you get some mean regression on the shooting back towards what his sophomore splits looked like, that's a really high level player. But yeah, I mean, the Mark hypothetical is interesting because, you know, there are only so many minutes to go around. But, you know, obviously he's committed to UCLA and I don't see that changing. Maybe it will, but he just committed there today. So
I don't think he was, I wasn't presenting it as something that we should try to do. I just thought it was interesting talking about the portal. And it's like, we had a guy that's, you know, considered like from a transfer perspective to be kind of a marquee five-star type transfer. And so it's like, do you try to, do you try to keep him? But
I think that the thing is, the tricky part about this, right, is if this was last season's version of Kobe, it's like you have no choice. You have to go after him. I mean, his BPM last year was 8.3. I mean, he was off the charts good.
Yep.
The problem is this season, his true shooting percentage was under 500. Yep. That's really low. I mean, that's really low. And he, you know, like here's what I think is going to happen at UCLA. I think he is going to be a defensive monster. He is going to be physical. Mick is going to motivate the hell out of him. I think he will absolutely be a terror. I think he's going to struggle on offense a lot because I think he's just going to feel like he's not exactly sure what his role is and what he's supposed to be doing. I know that Will McClendon left today UCLA, which is good for him because now there's like a spot for him, but like apparently Mick's also bringing in like Dominic Harris from LMU, former teammate of the Mobley brothers. So there's going to be like a lot of guards hanging out there. There's going to be like guys who can actually score the ball. And I think that's going to, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing for Kobe. That's just, I don't know. That's my guess. I don't know if you guys see it differently.
Let me throw out one question to you guys. Is there anybody on UCLA's roster that you would want?
Oh, Adembona.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't go to the NBA. Yeah.
Right. You're talking about, you mean other than Adembona?
Other than Adembona, is there anybody that pops like, okay, you know, this is a guy he could be the player to be named later for Kobe here.
Jason, do you want to go first on this one?
Probably not off the top of my head. But
I think that the question would be like, does Dylan Andrews fit the must profile? He actually might, because of the kind of, you know, he plays he doesn't get force a lot of steals, but he does play very solid defense. The shooting is all over the place. I mean, we're talking about a guy who will hit a whole bunch and then go cold for a few games. So that part is a little bit scary. So he'd be like, he's the only one, like I would not want Sebastian Mack I don't think.
He does draw a lot of fouls if you're trying to fit that profile.
That's true. That is true.
He's a decent free throw shooter.
You know, 6'1" shooting guards who don't play defense tend to have deleterious effects on their team sometimes. Yep. So that's I don't know, my thinking there. I would not want Stefanovic. I don't. I mean, is he coming back?
I think he has another year. Yeah. And watch out too, because Tracy Pearson did say that Devin Williams is a budding star for UCLA.
There you go.
I'll throw that out
very,
there.
Very yeah. reliable source.
Yep. Okay. Before we get out of here, Jason, any other thanks so much for joining us. I'd love to have you on again. Any other thoughts you have before we get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think some of the stuff that about him being a firebrand, you know, I think it's frankly like pretty good for the fan base. Like, maybe we need someone to come in and rip his shirt off and tell people to get their butts to Galen Center, right? Like, on the football side, people always love to harken back to what? Pete Carroll, Coach O, right? Like, what did those guys bring to the table? They bring infectious energy, swagger, confidence. You know, we're going to be walking into places like Michigan State and Purdue and Wisconsin next year. Like, let's have them led by a guy who isn't afraid of anyone. And I think that's exactly what you're getting with Muss, right? Like, we haven't – when was the last time USC hired a successful sitting head coach from a power conference team in men's basketball?
I think it was George Rabbit was the only other
George
one.
George Rabbit, that's 40 years ago.
Yeah, it's right? I mean, this just years. Doesn't
It's not
happen.
Enfield, it's not KO, it's not Floyd, it's not Bibby, right? Like, you're going 40 years – of the person stepping into this job and not necessarily knowing what it looks like to run all aspects of a power conference basketball team. I think it's a huge win to bring someone in that can say, hey, this is how you do it, right? Like, someone who's not going to be afraid to challenge the athletic department and the fan base to get people in the seats or change the way the team practices or strength trains or eats or travels, right? Because that's just the way we've always done it here before. So, I mean, I give Andy a lot of credit for coming into this job when it was an absolute dumpster fire and bringing it back to respectability and a solid level of success. But like, as I said earlier, I can look across the board in a one-on-one comparison with Muss, and he's achieved better results in terms of how his teams play possession by possession, where they finish at KenPom, do they do better or worse relative to their roster talent, do they rebuild quickly, and like every single box goes to Musselman. So, you know, it's kind of like SMU gave us this unexpected chance to keep upgrading the program, and it feels like we've done it. So I'm thrilled.
Yeah, Nick, I mean, we were sitting there thinking, what's, you know, we're heading into a very precarious situation as we go into this offseason. We knew guys would be transferring out of the program. We knew it was going to be rough. We knew that Andy had not had a lot of success in the transfer portal since NIL became a thing. And 2 weeks later, everything that's happened, I don't think, you know, who could have imagined this actually happening like this. And now amongst all the other things about Musselman, he's like the, you know, number one transfer portal guy. It's pretty amazing.
You just don't have a lot of weaknesses with the resume. That's kind of the big thing for me, is you've got regular season success. Jason touched on the winning percentage. You've got postseason success with the Elite Eights and the Sweet 16s in recent memory here at multiple levels, the mid-major level and at the high major level. You have NBA experience. You have a coach who's shown he can win in the modern era with the portal. You have a coach that's shown the ability to recruit elite talent out of high school. There's aren't a lot of holes here. He plays an up-tempo style, which will be very attractive to high school kids in that stack 2026 California high school class. And then beyond that too, we've touched on this in the past briefly, but you kind of do need that energy guy to fundraise for NIL in LA. I mean, this isn't going to be like SMU, where they're going to, you know, line everything up for you on a silver platter because they're so desperate to be relevant with their move to the ACC. USC is a football school, and it's a lot easier to convince donors to donate to football than to basketball. So I think Musk checks out that box too, just with his energy, and I do think he'll be a tremendous fundraiser for the basketball program NIL as well.
Well, thank you guys so much. So huge podcast today. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back and kind of doing normal podcasts here soon. But this is going to be one heck of a off season because we got a lot of roster spots to fill. So we're gonna have news about
Yeah.
guys committing, and we'll evaluate those players. We'll evaluate players that are being associated with SC now that Musselman's here. So thanks everyone for listening. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Nick, as always, and bye down, everyone.
Right on.
Right on. Thank you.